It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Phileas Club. This is episode 80, a special on Thailand, where we cover a number of topics from society to culture to politics, with a nice fun bit at the end about technology and how Thailand is a mobile-first country. Hope you enjoy it. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Phileas Club. This is an episode where we're going to be having a one-on-one conversation with Letad. Did I pronounce it right?
Perfect.
Yes. So this is a special. We're going to be talking about a specific topic. In this case, it's Thailand. So it's a little bit different from our usual episodes, our regular episodes, if you're used to that. We usually talk with different people from different parts of the world about the news topics and international news, things like that, that have happened over the past month. And every once in a while, we do a special where we specifically discuss the, you know, day-to-day, the worldviews, the things like that, with one person that might have some different opinions on things from what we're used to. And simply because they're from a different part of the world, at least for me. And this is especially true since we reached the goal on Patreon that allows us to do that on a regular basis. So thank you so much to the patrons who are making this possible. We went above the $500 goal, and so we're going to have these regularly now. Not every month, but every once in a while. And so thank you so much. You know, I've talked about the support a lot in the past few episodes, and it's been tremendously motivating for me to get to see that kind of thing. So again, thanks a lot to the patrons. Patriots is the name I call my French language podcast, patrons. That's the really clever play on words. See, they're patriots. So anyway, it's not about Patreon, it's about Thailand. And Letad, some people might have heard you in previous episodes, but maybe we can take a couple of minutes for you to tell us a little bit about yourself. So just to be clear, you are from Thailand, currently residing in Bangkok, so you're the real deal.
Yeah, I'm 100% Thai, born and raised, although to talk about my background, there was a brief period when I lived in the U.S.,
so about 5 years when you were a kid, right?
Yeah, when I was 8 to 13. I lived in Maryland in the USA.
Excellent. And you're about 30 now, right?
About 30, yeah. I'm 31.
Okay. So, and you work in IT?
Yeah, I run an e-commerce platform built for people around this area. Yeah, think of it as like Shopify, but built for conversations such as Facebook chat, Facebook Messenger, which seems to be, you know, conversational commerce seems to be all the rage in the tech industry in the West right now.
So this is, I think we're going to get to talk about tech and IT in Thailand, because that's an area which a lot of listeners might be interested in, given the kind of shows I do. But before we get into that, I had a couple of more, I think, mundane and possibly dumb questions, but that's okay, because I don't make any secrets of my silliness. But one question I had was, first, you know, the image we have in the West of, or at least I have, of Thailand is mainly a tourist image, because that's the main contact we have with the country. And the only time I went there was for tourism. And I think there was a little bit, there's this idea in rich countries where that we are sometimes going there and it's fantastic, it's super cool, but we're exploiting the local population a little bit because we're exploiting the lower wages and sometimes the conditions that might not be as good as they are at home. And so we're sort of cashing in on cheap holidays and on cheap vacations at the beach. How is... Right. And I know tourism is obviously a big part of your country's economy. So I'm wondering how you guys see tourism as an industry and those tourists that come and don't know anything and just want to lie on the beach or maybe go to a couple of temples. You know, how do you regard them?
Yeah, actually, tourism is very important for us. So we don't actually see it as exploitation at all. I mean, tourism, there's basically, I would say, three types. One is what you just said, you know, just like people coming from all over the world because, you know, the food is great but cheap. I mean, everything's cheap compared to your part of the world. The other part is, of course, the parts that go to the red light districts. And then there's the third part, you know, the people here, like they call them like the sexpats. And then the third part would be kind of like the more premium tourists that actually spend on more premium items and tours and hotels. So in terms of like the first part, which seems to be what you're referring to, or the vast majority of the people that travel here, we love that. You know, it's not like the wages that we have are like unsustainable. I mean, it's just basically what we earn for our quality of life. So, I mean, the more you come, the better. What we don't like is people that, you know, just come in and don't spend on anything.
So come in, but how can you not spend on as anything? You're going to be eating, yeah. You're going to be, right? You can't not spend.
Yeah, as long as you're spending something and it's on local services, don't, you know, the money you're spending is not like, we make profit on those, you know, it's not like you're spending and people are not making a profit on those items. So I think tourism is like a large chunk of our income. So please come and exploit us. Spend on the cheap food and services.
All right.
But, yeah, but it's interesting because, you know, like since, you know, I've heard tourists say like our service is so good. It's basically because like, you know, our wages are cheap. So I would say the quality of the service per like by each person is not necessarily great, but we have a lot of people doing the service.
Oh, so you have like three people doing the job of one person, but it
makes up things like self-service checkout doesn't make sense for us. You know, you go to this gas station, like having you do your own stuff. It's like, why would you do that when you can have someone help service putting in the gas or checking out, things like that. Yeah.
So for us, what we look at thinking, oh, this is great service, is just that it's so cheap that you can do it with people instead of having self-service or a machine or something like that. So you're going to have several people taking care of you when you come here. But is that... sorry to interrupt, but is that the case when you go to the gas station? Are you going to have someone clean your car and fill up the tank for you and not do it yourself? Because this is local, right?
Yeah, it's the norm. It would be considered bad service if no one did. Hmm. And they just come in, they offer to wipe the windows for no charge.
Okay.
It's just because labor is cheap.
Right. I guess it makes sense. You mentioned something. When we say service is good, I think we also mean, to an extent, the image I have of Thai people is that you guys are always happy and smiling. And I'm sure that's not the case, but I'm wondering if you genuinely are, you know, it's kind of I'm going to manage to offend like a billion people in one sentence and literally a billion people because I'm going to talk about India. But it's the image I have of Thailand is a more, you know, Thai people are slightly more rugged version of Indians in that they seem to be in a good mood all the time. And I'm sure it's not the case, again, for both Indians and Thai, but is there any truth to it? Is there some, life philosophy that makes you guys a little bit happier than we are? Or,
you know, it's one of those things that we didn't really realize until, like, foreigners started commentating on it, that, like, Thais are always smiling and happy. You know, then as a society, we kind of realize, you know what, we kind of are. I think it comes from like a culture of, it's similar to, we have a word called grain zai. It means like loose. It's similar to like, you know, you don't want to bother other people for things. You know, it's like, oh, don't go over to their house. They're busy. You know, I don't want to disturb you because you might be working on something. And it's that kind of culture where we like to, the norm for us is to smile and not like disturb other people and be a good guest. So, I mean, it's like you said, we're not necessarily happy, but it's a norm for us to meet, when we meet other people, it's just polite to be smiling and so kind.
And kind, that's an important part of the equation. So is that sort of masquerading maybe your real feelings? Because I know that in Japan, you know, you have honne and tatemae, which is the inner feelings and the face you present to everyone, and they're often very different. And of course, in any society, you're not always going to speak your mind. But in the case of Thailand, is that sometimes you're angry or unhappy and you still have to smile? Or is it like you're genuinely more happy, smiley in general, as well as it being a trait of the society?
Yeah, I think we've come to realize that as in general, I mean, it helps that we are very forgetful as a like a society. We forget about recent history pretty quickly. So, you know, when dramatic things come, we get together and after a while, we just kind of move on. So it's easy for us to move on. And yeah, and in general, I mean, the best selling industry is always related to entertainment. And the movies that Thais make that do well are always like feel good. So I think we always like, we are not very confrontational as a society, as like in our culture. So whenever things do get heated up, we're always bad at handling it.
So give me an example. If you get into an argument with a friend for something, I don't know, semi-serious. And of course, again, it's not going to be one example is going to encompass the entire population, obviously, but what would be the typical Thai reaction to, you know, someone, I don't know, for example, you paid for a full lunch and someone was supposed to reimburse you half and they forgot and they didn't do it and they're not paying you. Do you like forget about it? Never mind. Do you get angry? Or this might be a silly example, but.
Let me think about that. I'm not like the normal Thai. I'm just trying to think of like a normal Thai would happen. I think what would happen is they it's silly. Since we're bad at confrontation, what often happens is like they would not bring it up, but like they would like gossip about it to people around them. You know what I mean? Yeah. So when things get bad, they get bad. You know, we gossip around because we are not good at like facing the truth. We don't like to confront others. So there's a lot of talking behind people's back. So I think related to you, like saying, is it like, are we actually happy? I mean, it's not our true feeling. We're not necessarily sad, but we're not necessarily like in a good mood.
So what would happen if that person that is being bad-mouthed had just actually forgotten, hears about it, and wants to react to it? Do they go to the person and say, hey, I forgot about your money, you know, here it is? Or do they start bad mouthing them?
Oftentimes it goes into bad mouthing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's in our culture, like in Bangkok, keep in mind most of what I'm saying is basically Bangkok culture, so quote unquote, city people culture. But what would happen would be, exactly, they would start bad-mouthing or not understanding why they like it, and they're just like, instead of confronting them and clearing the air, they'll just be like, oh, that person's stupid, and they might gossip about them instead, about how stupid they are. Yeah, and so what I was going to say is that in the city, there's people like to say there's a very clear distinction between, quote, Thai companies and international companies in terms of culture. So people tend to like to prefer to work in international companies because it has a more, it has a more, you know, fair work culture. You know, there's less politics, there's less gossip because of the management direction to like clear the air. Whereas in local companies, there's just always constant gossiping behind back you know, playing up to your leaders, sucking up for positions and things like that.
Interesting. So it's basically... go ahead.
Yeah, when a Thai company has a good management structure, it's a saying that, like, yeah, it's managed like an international company.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Like when IKEA came in here not many years ago, or IKEA, when they advertise, they say like, okay, we're half joint venture, half of it's Thai, but we get the international management structure, not the Thai management. Yeah.
So it's company politics on steroids, I suppose.
Yeah, if you local culture.
So does that positive view of international companies extend beyond just the management structure? Like, do you prefer international brands, or are they, you know, more luxurious? Or, you know, I'm mm-hmm. not necessarily talking about tech or maybe hair products or whatever, you know?
It used to be, you know, it's really interesting. And we're in the time of change. Maybe I would say 3 to 5 years ago, definitely. We would always prefer international products. But, you know, I think the new generation with things like social media and the new generation of like being more open-minded and actually judging things based more on function and quality of the form rather than just the brand name. Has given a rise to being accepting of locally designed products if they look good. So branding is everything, good design is everything. And if you get, you know, celebrities to endorse it, then people are more accepting.
Thai celebrities, obviously.
Thai celebrities, yeah.
This, I don't know why this, what you were saying now, conjured in my mind the image of a busy Thai street in Bangkok, which actually, when I think back of my trip to Bangkok, does not correspond at all with the cleanliness and, you know, very well-ordered image I have of actually being in Bangkok. But it leads me to another question, which is, how modern is Thailand, and maybe more specifically Bangkok? I don't know, I'm guessing the two are different, but it's a vague question, but I'm sure it's a question that might come to the mind to many people.
Yeah, how orderly is it, right?
Well, no, how modern, you know?
Okay.
Do you have like super old Mercedes like you might see in some Middle Eastern countries that still run because they're built like tanks, and lots of tuk-tuks that are, you know, very noisy and have a lot of pollution. And I don't know. Do you all use modern computers and phones? Or
I don't know. I know what you mean. I think it goes back to what I was just saying about, like, we are pretty much more modern nowadays. So, I mean, the people that would stick by the brand, like, no matter what, you know, only European cars, for example. I think they are maybe ages over 60 or something, so there's less of them. So people that drive old Mercedes are more like, usually nowadays are more doing it because they like vintage style, like actually acknowledging it. And then in terms of modern, you know, it's hard. The modern is such a broad term. I mean, if modern refers to being organized and orderly, we are far from it. If modern refers to modern technology, you know, having the latest items, then we are very modern. We have usually, you know, everything new comes to us pretty soon. We have the like top class facilities. But this is in Bangkok, which has, you know, the poorest and the richest within the same, like the blocks next to each other, because they don't have a clear city planning. And we can I think, you know, going back to the politics and gossiping, the way we are as a society, you know, it comes a lot from social hierarchy, because we still have like royalty and social status. So I think everything like stems from there. And we also have a culture, you know, our culture of non-confrontation also leads to, you know, just letting things be and forgetting things. You know, we are not like strict in, like, you know, if work comes out not perfect, we are like, oh, okay, that's fine.
Okay.
You know, we're not perfectionists.
Really? That's interesting. How do you approach that aspect of your, you know, I guess it shows in work ethics, in everything.
Yeah.
Because you run your own company. Is that something you're faced with your, do you have employees or?
Since I've always been in Thailand, I would say maybe my standards are low. But luckily, I mean, from what I hear, I mean, when I finished work, I worked at ExxonMobil in IT. So I've always been privileged to work with people that are, you know, have higher quality standards. On the other hand, my girlfriend runs a hotel. She works with a bit more, I think, is it blue collar?
Yeah,
it's not blue enough. Collar. Yeah, so it's, yeah, and I also, one of my business partners also run like dealerships, which like run blue collar people, and they say that like it's the standard is just very different. We're like very laid back. So I'll give you an example. We have an issue where the blue collar work and especially labor, you know, in factories nowadays is not there's it's very hard to find Thais. Usually, it's people from like Burma, Cambodia. Simply because Thais would not like are too lazy, don't like grunge work, and we just have no choice. And people, maybe 2 years ago, we raised the minimum income.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the factory people were like, the managers were like, the issue isn't we can handle the higher minimum income. The problem is it's hard for us to find like legal ties to work in the first place.
But is it because the ties are in a society that has higher standards of living now, and so they would aspire to different kinds of jobs? Or is it just because they just don't want to do that job, which requires a little bit of rigor?
Yeah, I think we don't want to do the job that requires a bit of rigor.
Really?
It's also
isn't it kind of a, you know,
you go to restaurants nowadays, even in Bangkok, you know, a lot of waiters and waitresses don't speak Thai that well.
Because, you know, they're foreigners?
There are people from countries around here. They're foreigners. Yeah. And they work harder. I mean, people always say that, you know, these foreigners work harder than Thais.
That is less. So the foreigners are the foreigners that do low income jobs are regarded as more virtuous, I would say, than many Thai workers.
Yeah, the only downside is they don't speak Thai that well. But if they can get them, then they're really happy because they work hard. You know, they try their best. You don't have to teach them, like, they're more service-minded because they try harder.
That's a very different approach than what we have here, you know, in our Western countries that are becoming more and more nationalistic, and where we think, well, those foreigners are... those foreigners are coming to take our jobs mentality is what you're saying. Is that the case?
What can I say? Yeah, I guess that's the case, because like Thais, I mean, like the managers are complaining, like they would like to hire Thais, but, you know, they keep getting disappointed by it.
So what do the Thais do that have, you know, blue collar jobs when they realize,
I think they find like office work, like clerks, you know, clerical type stuff to do. That's what my guess, because we don't actually have a pretty like low unemployment rate.
Okay.
So there must be some
workplace dynamics happening there that mean
there's mobility. Yeah, they see more as more comfortable.
And so they can go be lazy in clerical work.
Yeah, it might be more, they see as more respected, things like that.
Of course.
Even though if you actually, the people selling food on the food stalls are looked down upon, even though if you calculate, those people are pretty rich. They earn more than most office workers, you know.
You know, it's kind of a similar thing here with people like handymen and, you know, people who are going to fix your pipes and fix your fridge and stuff like that. They're not very well regarded, I'm sure, in most Western countries, but they make a lot of money.
I mean, the good quality handymans here, you know, they come in like Toyota Camrys, which is considered like a good car here. You know, it ties Dutch people by what cars they drive.
That's interesting.
Even though like the most average office worker might use like a lower price car. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's another thing. Status is everything. People like are judged by like the cars they drive.
Mm.
So people like we have 70% tax on imported cars.
Oh wow! But, okay, so if you can afford to have so if you can afford to have a foreign car, then it means you're really rich.
Yeah. Once you're rich, you buy a Mercedes, a BMW.
Mm. What
so
car?
Then the real rich.
What car do you have? No, maybe you don't have to answer. I'm kidding.
I'm a contrarian, so my car is like about 20 years old.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Yeah. Where does it show other than in the car, that status thing? Is it like, I don't know, jewelry or the kind of clothes you wear? I'm sure it is, but.
Yeah, the older generation where it's not, I don't know an easier way to say this, but more attached to the country or the brand rather than the actual quality.
Mm.
Yeah, as in saying they don't actually have real like taste. They just do it because like, okay, this is considered like famous brand. Those would also judge others by like, we wear gold, you know, gold necklaces. Right. So they would wear gold necklaces, and also there's a market for images of Buddhist monks.
Right.
So it's necklaces. I don't know the proper word to say it, but it's just kind of like Buddhist relics, icons on those necklaces. So they just wear that, and then you know they flaunt their Rolex watches.
You know, it's funny. Some listeners might know I was actually born in Lebanon, and I get a definite scent of Middle East in the description you're giving. You know,
I think that's you're right because you know our Buddhism is actually mixed in with, which is you know the primary religion of the country. It's mixed in with a lot of Hindi. Buddhism usually isn't very you know spiritual in terms of spirits, ghosts. Things like that, or astronomy. Which one is the actual looking at stars? Astrology.
Astrology is the other one that has more signs.
So astrology is very big here. Real Buddhism is actually very scientific, but you know, in Thai Buddhism, there's like. If there's a strange mark on a tree, then we go to worship it for lottery numbers.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we actually have a lot of Indian and Hindi influence from back in the day.
So how big of a role does Buddhism have in the country?
The years we use, so the current year is 2017, right? The calendar we use is actually so the calendar 2017 is called the Gregorian.
Calendar.
Yeah, we use the Buddhist calendar.
What year is it for you?
It's 2560.
2560.
Okay. Yeah, 2560.
2560. So I think. So what happens in the next 500 years since you lived there? That I would be interested in. No, okay, it was a joke. I understand how it works. Okay.
So it's everything is since it's I think it's more than over 90% of the population is basically everywhere without people actually realizing how much influence it has. So everywhere there are like places to worship. Images, icons of monks, and every ceremony has like monks coming in to pray,
okay,
chant.
Let me go back to the calendar. There is that the calendar that most of the population uses, like on a daily basis. That's what you use. Do you have the same months? Do you have like
only the year is different?
Oh, only the year. So you still have January, February, etc.
Yeah,
I guess that was adapted at some point.
Yeah,
Okay. So, yeah, if it's only the year, it's not too big of a deal, I suppose.
Yeah, so everyone has to remember both the years. We use it pretty interchangeably.
Okay. Right. You're talking about religion. I'm wondering something about Islam, because you said you told me that your mom is actually a Muslim, and I'm guessing there's a part of the population that's Muslim, right?
It's about 3%. 3%, okay. I think, the official number. Most of the people that are in, they mostly live in the south.
Okay.
So I'm a bit different. My mom was born and raised in Bangkok, so we are a bit more less strict in terms of religious teachings. Mm-hmm. We are more modern.
Right.
Like my grandfather taught my mom that, you know, to go ahead and learn the other religions and study and follow them. Only don't do just the things that we are not allowed to. For example, worship non-living statues. Mm-hmm. Things like that. Otherwise, and just, you know, go do meditation, go listen, it's fine.
Okay.
I think it's because since we are not living in like a holy Muslim area, we are just more open-minded because we're not using religion to govern each other.
So actually that's a question. I don't know how specifically Thai your answer is going to be, but I had a question about Islam in general, and of course it's always in the news with terrorism and extreme views, and I wonder how you or your mom or maybe Muslim people in that part of the world, you know, in Asia, relate to that. Is it completely foreign? Do you feel like it concerns you, or, you know, if it's different from people in the Middle East, which are clearly targeted by these ideas?
Right. I think it's interesting. It goes back to what I was saying, that we are bad at we like to avoid confrontation.
Okay.
So I
seems
think
like
that
a good tool.
Yeah. There, I think there's an underlying not hatred but dislike for Islam because of the news of like Muslim like extremists. But people don't actually say it out loud because they know it's not politically correct. But the dislike comes more from a lack of understanding, like all over the world has, that it's not really Islam the religion, but, you know, just a core group of people.
Okay.
I mean, not a core, sorry, but a small group of people, but of extremists. But, you know, I've caught riffs of it every once in a while from people that are a bit more, usually the type are usually more hot-headed. Mm. You know, they would be like, make, you know, the wide statements about like, you know, those Muslims, like, I hate Muslims, things like that. Like, why do they have to do this? Mm. But then usually when that happens, someone is like, the Thai is a Muslim. And then they would just like end it because we don't like don't confront each other here.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, there's going back to your question about how prevalent Buddhism is. In recent years, since along with all the political unsettlement, there's been core groups of extremist Buddhists that have been calling for Buddhism to be like have a more prominent role and official role in law and in governing. You know,
wow.
Okay,
that's interesting. And extremist Buddhists. How
extremist Buddhists in a Buddhist country.
The image we have of Buddhism is the one religion that is absolutely peaceful. I understand that's flawed, and there are many examples, but so can you give me examples of what an extremist Buddhist would ask or demand or do?
Mm-hmm. So just basically be unaccepting of other religions. What they wanted to do was, you know, have Buddhism be, I'm probably going to get this wrong, but I'll do the details, but what they wanted to do was kind of like have Buddhism be officially like the national religion. Mm. So in a way as to like saying that we're not accepting of other religions. Something like that. And I think my theory about this is having come from like a multinational religious background is.
Right. I don't think we mentioned it, but your dad is a Buddhist, so you have a lot of Okay.
Yeah, my father Buddhist, and the school I went to was a Christian school. Mm-hmm. So I've been exposed and studying it. I've always been curious about religions and how they work. I think it's basically like, and also, you know, how my mom's family is so open-minded, even though Muslims in the South aren't as open-minded. I think it's just like when religions is used as, when everyone in the same area has the same religion, often it is used and taken advantage of to govern people. So even though Buddhism at its core is pretty peaceful and they don't have really, since it's such a new religion, in Thailand, it's been taken advantage of. The extremist groups is like, the way, what would happen is like, to show their power, they would close major roads in the city to do a kind of like a sabbatical walk. Just to kind of like, even though they don't actually have to, you know, people outside that group would say they don't actually have to do it, but that group is just kind of like a passive aggressive way of showing power, that they can have, they have the influence of actually being able to close major roads just to do their you know, like sabbatical walk to pay respect to spirits.
And the I found the stats now. Islam is 5.5% of the country. Christianity is just 1%, and Buddhism is over 93%. So the country is kind of de facto Buddhist already. There isn't. Right. It doesn't really seem like you would need to state it as the country's official religion. But yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So is that... go ahead.
Yeah, the group I'm talking about, I guess I didn't explain it in detail. It's like, they're very rich, and they've managed to gain a following of people that are very, you know, rich and influential. So, I mean, I think that's kind of... When they have their own large temple area where if you go into, you get this very eerie, scary vibe of something being, you know, a cult. You know, the people, I don't think they would like that, maybe use that word, but it has that kind of feeling.
How big of a societal force are they now? Is that something that you feel is a, and I don't know how much you can talk about because there are some, you know, there's a lot of political instability and I, you know, so, but how big of a political and societal force have they become? Is it recent or?
They have always been underlyingly influential, but they actually usually stayed out of politics until recently. Their last, you know, attempt to kind of like have more influence has not been actually successful, but people are more aware of it. I think they're just trying to, you know, push to see how far they can go. But basically, I think once they were pushed back and, you know, being like, some of their major players were pushed back for, you know, exploiting people within their, you know, religion or sector. But even though that, it's just basically kind of like both using the powers to push against each other, because, you know, technically the what they were arrested for or taken in for might not actually be like 100% illegal. So it's kind of like political play.
Is that a concern for, because you're painting sort of a dark picture here. Is that a concern for people every day in the streets, or is it more of a...
It's a concern for everyday people when they're in the news. So right now, I think everyone's forgotten about it again.
Oh, okay. That forgetfulness. When we were preparing the show, you talked about your feeling that movements like, you know, we're still on the political... topic here, you're feeling that movements like the Brexit and the election of Donald Trump could have been felt, you know, the same kind of popular, movement could have been felt in Thailand before it happened in the UK even. Could you explain to us what happened?
Yeah, I can expand on that a bit more clearer than whatever. I think when Brexit and Donald Trump movement happened, a lot of people here that didn't agree with what happened, you know, with the red shirts and stuff.
Can you explain the red shirt thing?
So I think we were in the news for the last maybe five years for about the so-called red shirts. So what happened was, I'll try to be as neutral as possible, but what happened was we had a prime minister called Thaksin Shinawat. He became prime minister, and then he gained a lot of power, and he had a lot of populist following for, you know, his good work and actually paying attention to people outside of Bangkok. I think I briefly mentioned how I stressed that I'm in Bangkok, a Bangkok point of view and not the entire country. After a while, he was actually the first prime minister to actually complete a full four-year term. And then he was re-elected again. And then afterwards, he was overthrown by the military, which actually happens quite often in Thailand. And the way he was overthrown, leading up to it, was a yellow shirt, group of yellow shirts, which basically comprised of people that were opposed to Thaksin himself. And the people of the yellow shirts are usually people from Bangkok, you know. And there was hate speech, you know, accusations about Thaksin that riled people in Bangkok up and wear the yellow shirts. At the time, before the mob yellow shirts, yellow shirt was associated with the king. So the leaders of the yellow shirt can be excused. The opposing side accused him of using the yellow shirt to falsely use, you know, loyalty to the king as a way to oppose Thaksin. So they positioned Thaksin as the enemy to royalty.
Right.
Right.
Basically, and Thaksin was using the monarchy as a symbol to say, if you're against us, you're against the monarchy.
Exactly. Yeah. And they gained a lot of strong support because people loved the king, the former king. And then after all that happened was Thaksin supporters, which were the red shirts. So the red shirts usually comprise of people from outside Bangkok. You know, we had a lot of re-elections and Thaksin's party always won. And then there would always be red shirts and yellow shirts coming against each other. But again, mostly the yellow shirts are comprised of mostly people in Bangkok. So it's more easy for the yellow shirts, you know, win in terms of populist movements inside, to overthrow government from inside. So basically the military used the rilings of of people inside Bangkok saying, okay, it's unsafe, the political situation is not in control, we have to take over. And since the people in Bangkok are kind of in support of the military, the coups of taking over are always peaceful. There's no protest, there's no bloodshed.
And now they're in power.
They're in power. And so people refer to it as a red shirt movement because there was a time when, you know, the people in power was not the military. It was by the political party opposed to Thaksin that gained power after Thaksin was overthrown. The red shirts gathered in the city. And there was a period where they were dispersed. And then there was set fire to malls and, you know, a lot of kind of inner city chaos of explosions and, you know, a mini civil war. So that was kind of like the peak point of the confrontation. So, you know, we're not good at confrontation. So we actually do confront, it gets really bad.
Right.
We are not good at listening to other people's point of views. Mm.
So how do you equate that with what's happened in the West with the, you know, more populist movements of Brexit and Donald Trump.
Right. So if we go into the details of the red shirt, yellow shirt, basically the Thaksin and the government was accused of buying votes with their policies. And, you know, there's a sentiment of people in Bangkok saying, oh, you know, the people outside Bangkok, they're just not educated. You know, they just don't really understand how the world works. You know, even though it's the truth, people in the city don't acknowledge the fact of like the troubles that people outside the city have. There are a lot of people are poor, and not many people they feel like they are left out and not people, they're not helped. Everything is in Bangkok. No one cares about people outside. The former king was loved simply because he had a lot of projects that paid attention to people outside the city. You know, there's a sentiment from people outside the city that they're not being taken care of, they're overlooked, they're being taken advantage of. You know, if you're in Bangkok, you see like Porsches, Maybachs, you know, said BMW, Benz, like everywhere. So a lot of rich, very, very, very rich people inside. At the same time, there's a lot of people, you know, living below minimum wage outside. And, you know, no matter how hard they work, you know, they don't see, they're disillusioned with if they can actually escape poverty.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so once like Thaksin's government came in, there's a lot of policies that were both populist, but he also had a policy. So, you know, he actually went around and, you know, they felt like they were being taken care of. You know, people actually paid attention to them. So, you know, it's just like people are voting and not the people who vote for him. It's just like saying, you know what, we just don't like how the way things were. We just prefer like Thaksin's side of things. You know, we want change. This is the change that we wanted. So even though like the core people in the Bangkok, which might be considered more highly educated, didn't agree with it, the majority of the people in the country did.
You know, how stark is the difference in income and, I guess, situation between Bangkok and the countryside? Is it like deep poverty still outside the capital or the big cities? Or can people at least, you know, can they eat and do they have enough to survive, but they don't have any comfort? Or is it like some people are starving to death?
People aren't starving to death, fortunately, but they are able to survive if they stay where they are, you know, because fortunately we are an agricultural country, so food is not that much of a problem. But, you know, it's not, if they did not want to raise their standards, they can have a living, you know what I mean? Their standard of living is okay if they don't aspire to anything.
You know, it's really interesting because I think the more I think about all of this, the more I don't see it as necessarily a movement of people who are objectively rich versus people who are objectively poor. And I'm not just talking about Thailand here, obviously. But the more I think of it, the more it looks like the inequality is a main motivation for the unrest, you know?
There's a feeling of the people that are rich just keep getting richer and no one cares about the poor, you know? Because, you know, we have like agriculture is like a big industry here, but the people that have the most power are like the middlemen that do, you know, I don't know what the English word for it, but they refine the rice and distribute it. But they just pay the farmers like so low. And it's never really been taken care of because of like the people that are rich are influential. So, you know, they watch it and see like these people just keep getting richer even though they work hard. They feel like no matter how hard they work, they just keep getting taken advantage of.
You know what we got right after World War II in every country that was heavily impacted by World War II? We forcefully, and it was very expensive, we built huge middle classes. And that's what made societies work for, you know, over 50 years. And it seems like if you don't have a huge inclusive middle classes, no matter any other consideration of fairness, of, you know, communism or capitalism or the rules of government or anything, if you don't have a huge middle class that you build artificially, even if you need to, then it's going to lead to some sort of conflict.
I agree. That has been mentioned in intellectual discussions about a lack of middle class. There's also another theory that I tend to believe is that Thailand has not actually lost the war. or at least a modern war. And we have not ever really, we're the only country in Southeast Asia that was not, that did not belong to a foreign country. You know how, you know, France, you know, this country is occupied by, colonies. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I was looking for that word. Yeah, we were the only independent country. You know, we did not become a colony. So we never really had, we were never really suppressed. And in turn, we were never really had that feeling of a will to have to fight to get our country back to like its prime or anything like that. So our country, when compared to Southeast Asia, we are very well developed. But it's kind of like a feeling that we are not as, we're doing it despite of ourselves instead of because of ourselves. Maybe we could do better.
Interesting. Let's talk a little bit about some more trivial day-to-day things. I was talking about the modern aspects of society earlier. I'm wondering about really dumb things like, does every household have a washing machine or a dishwasher or, you know, these kinds of things? Or when you look at, are they even popular like American TV shows or movies, and you see someone with I don't know, like a coffee machine, you know, that does coffee in the morning. Do you think that's dumb or do you think that's something you'd like to have or you already have? You know, I don't know.
That's a good question. What do you want to start with?
Oh, okay. Appliances. What does the average Bangkokese family have as appliances?
So I would say washing machines and dishwashers are a bit of a luxury.
How do you wash your clothes then? Is it in the sink or?
I mean, my family does have a washing machine, but I don't think. Okay, I think washing machines are a bit more common, but dishwashers aren't. So we just wash them in the sink. But it's common for, you know, people living in dormitories, condos, to just kind of use wash them in buckets.
Right.
So I would say like majority of the average person, even in the city, wash it in Bangkok, wash it, you know, in buckets themselves. Because it's, you know, it's less, you don't have to buy a washing machine. It's costs less, it uses less water, things like that.
What about the coffee maker, like the Nespresso?
Yeah, I guess coffee maker is definitely a luxury item. It's like, you know, it's like the iPhone. It's like, if you have it, then, you know, you're living a good life.
So about
Nespresso is pretty new, actually.
Oh, do you start drinking espresso now?
The Nespresso? Nespresso. We drink coffee.
Okay, right.
Yeah, Nespresso. The way we drink coffee, like, you Europeans would hate it. We drink it cold and sweet a lot. Everything's sweet here and cold. I think it's because of the hot weather. We intermix, you know, lattes, cappuccinos. Very people drink hot coffee.
Well, I think you just described the Starbucks. I think it's absolutely fine. We'd be fine with it.
Yeah, it's like Starbucks, but it's like cheap Starbucks.
Okay. Do you have Starbucks? Yeah, do you have McDonald's? Of course you have McDonald's, right?
We do. Yeah.
Is McDonald's kind of a fancy...
Exactly. McDonald's is a fancy. It's... Okay, so the average dish of like a good meal, or, you know, a side vendor is about, I would say, 40 Thai baht. So a little bit over $1. So McDonald's is nowadays, it's like maybe 120 Thai baht. So that's like $3.
So that's the price of three regular fast food meals. Fast food or regular meals?
They're regular meals, but they're fast. it's our version of the fast food.
Okay, so how do you...
But it's not manufactured, it's cooked. You know,
it's cooked at the place, yeah.
Yeah, the most common type of restaurant for office workers is called made-to-order. You know, we call it made-to-order places. So you go in and you just order whatever you want, and they can make it.
Oh, like they don't have a menu? Or I guess they do, but you can ask out of it?
They have menu more as a way for you to brainstorm. So you don't actually need one. You know, you see this type of restaurant, just order.
Okay.
So yeah, that's the most common type.
And that's like the 40 bahts type of meal.
Yeah, Thai baht. Yeah, okay. That's the 40 Thai baht.
Okay. Can you tell me a little bit of the your maybe yours or normal worker's day? You know, wake up. Do you have breakfast? Do you take your car, or public transportation? I don't know if you have, you know, if you take buses or. Let's go through your day.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take you through the day of an average worker. I'm not average because, you know, I run a company and I don't fix the time of coming in and out of my company.
Right.
But, you know, I would say a majority of people are still doing, you know, 8 to 5 office. So they would wake up. If you're not fortunate enough to live somewhere near a SkyTrain or an underground, then you take the bus, and which is very crowded, into the city. So I think the average commute time would be something like an hour and a half.
Okay. And that's the average.
An hour to an hour and a half. That's the average. If you have to drive in into the city. Because the traffic's really bad. Since public transportation does not actually cover the entire area of Bangkok yet. Yeah, until recently, driving was also considered a status symbol. So people, like, even if they had like a SkyTrain near them, they might drive because it's more, you know, status.
Right.
Yeah. But luckily, recently people have gotten, it's just like the traffic has just been way too bad for them to worry about status. So people have taken to SkyTrains, you know, SkyTrains in the morning. I would say maybe a fourth of the time they break down because it's being used so much. Yeah, it's like it's common for travel from one place to another in Thailand is unpredictable because traffic could be bad all throughout the entire day. And also even public transportation breaks down, as like the SkyTrain has mentioned.
Okay.
So, yeah. So it's interesting in that it creates a culture of Thai time, which means that we're not what's the word for it? We're not on time.
Punctual.
We're not punctual, yeah. So it's common for people to be late because you know, we can always just say, you know, traffic is bad.
Right. Even if maybe it wasn't.
Maybe even if it wasn't, yeah. Mm. So it's a culture of Thai time which drives foreigners lazy. crazy.
Okay.
So that's the morning. Morning is hectic. People are sad. You know, the trains are packed, kind of like if you imagine Japan. And then, you know, we might drop by a food stall, you know, the made-to-order places I mentioned, for something to eat real quick before coming to the office. Because it's cheaper to just buy from those and actually make your own stuff at home.
Really?
And then, yeah, food is cheap. It's cheaper to buy outside than to actually make your own food. So a lot of culinary is going away because less people know how to cook their own food.
Right.
Yeah, and it's also not been turned into a formal kind of training in terms of Thai food. And I know Thai food is getting popular, but we don't actually have, like, you know, correct ways to... It's not been turned formally into, like, okay, this is how you make this type of dish. Yeah, We don't like it, you know. There's been like celebrity chefs that have tried it and they were looked down upon.
Right.
Like, why would you? That's not the way of the Thai food. Thai food.
Yeah. Thai food. You just go and do it, yeah. and learn in the little shop in the street.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Thais don't see Thai food. Thais wouldn't go to a fine dining restaurant to eat Thai food.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, but if you go into a mall, most of the restaurants are Japanese food.
Okay.
And then in terms of fine dining, there are some Japanese, but it might be more, you know, French, Italian, or steaks, things like that.
Okay. Yeah,
in hotels.
Okay, so right, then so the worker gets into work.
We get to work. Okay, and then we gossip for an hour.
I think that's the same in the entire world.
You know, yeah. I think in terms of in the office, it's similar. Expect that we have the average, you know, Thai office worker might be not, as I mentioned, not as productive. We need to be, you know, there's a lot of politics, gossiping. Even though we and then in lunch, you would also walk outside the office. So, you know, if you had, if you do a Google and had like lunch inside the building, it might not be popular. We like our food. We like our variety of food. We like to walk around. We don't like to stay in the building.
Really? Okay.
We like to walk outside, get a breath of air, you know, walk 15 minutes, go into this type of restaurant. Office workers are very serious about planning what they're going to eat.
Okay.
And then who is coming and who is not, you know. They can also plan days ahead of what will be eaten in Friday, for example, something like that.
So you go and as then, a group with your coworkers and maybe someone who had been bad-mouthed is not invited and they're sad.
Oh, yeah.
And then they start bad-mouthing the others. And okay.
Yeah. And if you don't go as a group, you're looked as weird.
Okay. Even if you don't want to. I'm a loner. And I usually don't eat with people. I mean, it depends, but sometimes I don't eat with people from work when I used to work in actual places with other people. That was kind of okay,
like me.
But yeah.
Yeah, you're like me. People always thought I was like hard to access, you know, not hard to talk to because I didn't want to eat lunch when everyone else was eating lunch.
Right.
You know, I don't like getting into queues.
Exactly.
You know, Thais like to go to restaurants that have queues because that means it tastes good.
That's the better one, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of queues everywhere. You know, I hate queues.
Okay, so you go eat. How long is the lunch break?
For offices that are strict, it's an hour.
Okay.
Those kind of offices tend to also close their air conditioning during that hour. To save energy.
Really? Okay.
In my former company when I was an employee, it could last, you know, a bit more than an hour because it was a bit more flexible.
Okay.
But usually it's about an hour. And then we come to work and then if it's like an 8-to-5 or 9-to-5 job, then at 5 straight they get up and go home.
So you,
and then
you
wait into the traffic.
So you're not expected to like stay longer and work overtime and like at 5 you leave.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good.
For so-called Thai company.
Right, right. What about a Western company?
International companies is
I keep saying Western. It's international.
Yeah, Western is good. I mean, we actually say Western as well. More politically correct. Actually, Japanese, you know, I would say Thai companies are a bit more flexible than what I just mentioned. The most strict would be Japanese companies. So they actually have the Japanese work culture. You know, being strict on time, punctual. So I'll tell you about, you know, this might give you an idea of how Thais are. But there's a lot of Thais that go up idolizing Japan and Japanese culture. And every single one of them that I know that managed to end up living there and working there always say that only travel to Japan, but don't actually work here.
Honestly, working in Japan is a bad experience for anyone, I'm sure. It's a special kind of place. All right, so you finish work.
International companies, Western companies, yeah.
Yeah.
It's usually considered to be more flexible. Usually it's more flexible time. Mm-hmm. Even though it's flexible time, it depends on your boss, but a lot of more of the bosses, like, in my first boss, I came at 11 or 12, and she didn't mind. When I changed my boss, she actually, you know, came to say, like, you know, you should come in a bit more early, even though the rules are not say that I can come in late.
But if you came that late at 11, did you also stay later to?
Yeah, I stayed later. And then there were people that thought that I was such a hard worker because when they went home, I was still around. I would be like the last ones out of the office. They didn't realize I was also one of the last in the office.
All right. So when they finish work, they go through the hour and a half of traffic again, which sounds like a nightmare. And then what do they do in the evening, maybe on the weekends?
In the evening, it might even be like 2 or 3 hours. Traffic tends to be even worse in the evening. I think before we get to the weekend, I think I should also mention that there seems to be a lot of freelancers in Bangkok. You know, people that aren't actually like fully employed. I think that because no matter where you go, you know, if you go into... No matter what time you go to department stores, there's always people around.
Okay.
Yeah. That aside, when we go to the weekend, as I mentioned, shopping malls everywhere. In the evening, after work, we usually go to mosque. We don't always go directly to home. I think that comes from the weather being hot. So, yeah, back in the day, back before the modern day, the center of the villages was often Buddhist temples. That's where everything took place. So we have like a culture of saying Buddhist events. And temple events. Yeah, we call them temple events if it's directly translated. And those are usually carnivals, you know, things that take place in the village. Nowadays, it's in malls. So
the malls
any
are
events,
the new Buddhist...
The new temples. Yeah, the new Buddhist temples. Yeah, when people want to meet each other, they go to malls that are inside the city. You know, if they don't have anything to do, they might go to a local mall nearer to their home. They meet up each other up at mall. So everything's there, you know, movie theaters, restaurants, shopping places.
So what kind of activity do they do for fun? Like
movies.
Is it movies? Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Foreign movies.
Foreign movies. The local movies are, there's usually a cycle of how popular they are. There's one or two production houses that always manage to make hits, but it's always feel good movies. Our local movies are pretty popular around the area. You know, they're exported to Taiwan. Chinese people like some of them as well. And you know, in Vietnam, I like to compare Thailand to as kind of like the United States of Southeast Asia.
Really?
We're kind of the USA of Southeast Asia in that we think we're like well developed, a bit arrogant about what place we are, and then our culture is also permeates the countries around here. So you know, people around here like know and like Thai celebrities and Thai music.
You mean in other
in Vietnam,
countries.
In Laos, you know, neighboring countries, Cambodia, you know, they actually copied out the style and actual song of our songs.
Really?
You know, Thais would be accused of copying, you know, taking, you know, like a Britney Spears song, changing the lyrics and saying it's ours. But then the Laotians, or I forget the countries, where they would copy the Thais down to a T. So for example, there's this one band time where we took like, you know, an old pop idol that's still popular and matched them with like a rock star and have this song. So we saw like, you would see karaoke from neighboring countries where they also dress the same and took the same concept and have the same type of music.
Okay. All right. So music, movies, I guess everything is similar to what we have here as well. I want to finish with a little bit of specific tech conversation. I think I heard an iPhone sound earlier, so you must be a fancy rich person. I bet you secretly drive a Mercedes as well. I'm kidding, but so I'm guessing Android is the most popular platform in Thailand
as a country. Yes. We have our telcos permeate, you know, those cheap Androids throughout the country. But in terms of tech, I think it would be interesting for people listening. The way we use our tech is very different. I work in the field of, so we are a mobile first country. So what that means is that if you think about it, before now on desktops, the way you actually access internet to the desktops means you actually have to have one, a desktop computer, but also two, actually an internet network that permeates throughout the entire country. You know, and in terms of that landline network, we never had that. And also the people outside Bangkok couldn't afford a computer or understand why would they even need it for the first place.
Right.
So we kind of skipped the desktop generation. And people actually started coming online when cheap Android phones were accessible.
So that's like 5-7 years ago.
Yeah, and I would even say in Thailand more about 3-4 years. So we have only really started coming online 3-4 years. So you get patterns and behaviors that are interesting, such as people are very social media heavy. You know, we are like, people like to say, you know, Siam Paragon, which is like one of our malls, is the most checked in place on Instagram in the world.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So everyone's on Facebook and Instagram. Like if we had like 35, we had, our population is like almost 70 million people. And the amount of people online is something like 35 million. So if 35 million people had access to mobile phones, the Facebook would also show statistics to say that there are 35 million Facebook accounts in Thailand.
Wow.
And 35 million Line accounts in Thailand. So people here don't know what a web browser is, and they don't know what the internet is. However, really? They know what Facebook is, they know what YouTube is, they know what Line is.
So they know apps. They don't really know anything else.
Yeah, I mean, if you go
they,
to people,
they don't understand,
you know,
the other side of the internet.
Yeah, if you go to the people that are, you know, not less tech savvy or people that are less educated or whatever that access these phones, you ask them, like, do you use the internet? They say no. You know, and then you see them watching, you know, Thai local dramas on the YouTube because they don't know that's the internet.
Right.
Right. Hmm. So we're all, we're mobile first.
But you say mobile first, but you have access to a web browser when you have a mobile.
Yeah, but they don't realize it's a website or a web browser. They click the link through Line or Facebook. Line is a messaging app that's popular here.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Okay.
And the way we buy online is people here don't understand how to use shopping carts. We buy through chat.
Really?
You know, and then
the field you're in. But you buy through chat.
Yeah. So it's really interesting, and I like to talk about it because, you know, having used to live in the United States, I found it really interesting myself. If you think about it, it goes back to being service minded, and it relates to the trend I mentioned of people nowadays willing to buy local brands. What happened is that there's two factors coming to play here. Buying through chat is actually probably not just in Thailand, but emerging countries. When I pitched my startup to Europe or the USA, people didn't get it, but South Americans got it right away.
Mm.
There's the two factors here is one, payment.
I'm going to interrupt you for just a second. When you say buy through chat, I'm sure it's very obvious for to you. And I have a vague idea of how it would work, but describe it exactly? Because
So let's say I find a product on Facebook. You know, I'm sure everywhere people use social media to advertise their products. But here, when we find it on, you know, Instagram or Facebook, what would happen is we would message them in Facebook Messenger or Line to ask about the product. And then once they decide to buy, they don't go to a shopping cart. They just say, okay, tell me the name, the number of the bank to transfer the money to.
So you would have an employee of that store, shop, whatever, talking to you and saying, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And they will give you the bank account number, and then you would transfer the money and attach a slip, a receipt that's evidence that you've actually transferred the money. And then the service would say, okay, thank you for your service. We will send it to you.
So that's for physical items, like a pair of shoes, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and for digital items, we just pirate them.
Right, so it doesn't apply. Makes sense.
Yeah, and sadly, it's gotten better, but yeah.
Okay, so you want the shoes? You go to the so it's not through a store; it's through a Facebook page, for example.
Yeah, since we can buy through chat, if you think about it, you know, Facebook is the easiest way, and Instagram, social media is the easiest way to set up a storefront if you don't need a shopping cart.
Right. Okay, so you see it anywhere, Instagram, Twitter, whatever. You see something, a message that shows a product you want. Mm-hmm. You message the account. You say, hi, I'd like to buy it. They give you the account you have to send it to. You get out of the app. You go to your bank app. You transfer the money to that account.
Right.
And then how do you get that proof of transfer to attach to the...
You take a screenshot of...
Really?
Of the transfer, like the time that it has been transferred, and send it to the seller.
So they receive it, they check that they received the money, I'm guessing, because it's instantaneous. They see that they received it, and they say, okay, thank you, we'll send it to you. and you hope that you're going to get it and you didn't talk to a scammer.
But exactly. I'm guessing,
right. Okay. I understand how it works now.
Yeah. But people, when I pitched this 3 years ago, people considered it weird and thought that we would, you know, eventually use a shopping cart. But the way I like to describe it is, you know, in the Western world, you always walk, you'll have shopping malls and department stores. But, you know, in developing countries like us, we have markets. And when people go to markets, they don't pick a product and take it to the cashier. We talk to the seller and we haggle the price. So it's more natural for us to talk to someone. And also the interface of actually talking to someone. If I had to teach my mom to buy something, I would tell her to chat to someone instead of teaching her how to use a shopping cart.
Right, right. Okay, so what does your startup add to that system then, if it's all available by chat and you can just send a picture?
We just make it more manageable.
So it's more back-end, I guess.
Yeah, but we just do the back-end for them to be able to manage that. We do invoicing. What you're going to see Facebook roll out is actually, you know, they call it a product page and also invoicing. So what would happen is that you can actually, so Facebook pages will show products with prices, but once you press buy, it will actually be sending a message to the page instead of actually like a proper checkout. And then the next step to buy is, you know, the seller would be able to issue an invoice which has the products and also the payment, types of payment available to the buyer. Instead of, you know, so it's basically instead of the buyer at using a shopping cart, it's the seller creating a shopping cart for the buyer.
Right, right.
If you know, yeah, you follow. That is basically what we built 3 years ago. Except
So the store has to have a lot of people answering those chats. It's like a call center. Yeah. It's a chat center.
Yeah, but our labor is cheap, so we managed to scale it.
And those people use desktops or laptops. I mean, they don't use mobile phones.
Both.
So you can conduct that business through mobile phone. I mean, on the store side, right?
Yeah,
to answer the clients.
Yeah, if we're on the go, because a lot of sellers, you know, they're working at the office, so their office might block Facebook, for example. They use it through the phone, but of course it's much more efficient if they use it on desktop.
Right. And the thing is, you need to have someone available all the time to answer people. And there are peak hours, I'm sure, between, you know, at noon and afternoon and stuff like that. So
yeah, it's a new call center. People chat instead of calling.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. So definitely.
Yeah. Some products
that
sell to mothers. Mothers would be messaging at like 3 a.m. in the morning.
Okay. All right. Cool. I think that's a pretty extensive view of a lot of different aspects of Thailand. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about to discuss, or are we good?
I'm good. I think do you have any questions? I think I just like to stress and read this, like, carefree, happy people. Anyone's welcome to visit. I'm sure you'll have a good time. And people would love like our beaches and lifestyle. I would advise you to just like stay away from Bangkok and just go to the go to either northern area where we have a lot of good mountains, or you know, any beach. Usually through the south is nice.
Yeah, I think.
There is one aspect I would like to talk about.
Oh, sure, go ahead.
Now that I talk about tourism, so it's kind of weird. The way our political system is, every now and then you hear about, you know, an explosion happening in the city, or, you know, the red shirts violence in an area. Usually it's safe, even during those times. When things happen, they usually stay in that area and they don't actually spread out. I don't know if it's good advice, but usually, you can ask me, for example, things are usually normal, even though in the news it seems like there's a big violence in the entire country.
Well, if you're bringing it up, there were a few, a couple of years, as you said, maybe it was a couple of years ago, things seemed like they weren't just a little bit of violence in a small area. Are you saying that? I mean, you mentioned
even at that time, when their malls were on fire, as long as you weren't in that area, you were safe. So things are always safe around to travel to.
I'm not sure how to understand this. Does that mean that the political unrest wasn't as big as it seemed to be when we were looking at the news, or does it mean that? It was like everyone knew there was political unrest and they didn't, you know. Ooh, what's happening?
Sorry.
That's okay.
Sorry. Yeah.
Because it seemed like it was kind of a revolution in when we looked at the news. Was it a really thing or I don't know.
It's a really big thing. You know what? If you didn't stay in social media and you didn't go into like areas in the inner city, you might not even notice it.
Wow. So how do you explain it?
I think everything takes place in social media, and you know, the political unrest, the way I would explain it is that, again, during that for that specific one in particular, it was the red shirts that were protesting, and they weren't actually Bangkok people in Bangkok. And again, back through the confrontation thing, if it wasn't actually in the area of confrontation, people didn't actually confront each other or feel violent about things outside those danger areas.
Okay.
And also, we have a culture, I don't know what it is, but we have a culture of like covering things up. A lot of things Thais are ignorant about because the media is not allowed to talk about it. For example, every once in a while, we might have a bomb warning in an inner city area. And then after a while, people will just forget that it happened and don't really know who or what laid it.
You know, I don't know if you're describing a wonderful place or kind of a scary place.
I would say it's scary if you think about it. You know, I think our country is a classic example of ignorance is bliss. I think every people that follow us every once in a while might notice that every other year we will have, people dressing up as Nazis.
Oh, neo-Nazis, okay.
But as like for cosplay. They might be a parade where the concept was people were Nazis and have Hitler for fun.
So it wasn't an ideological thing. It was just that's the theme for today.
They just thought it was cool.
Okay. Yeah. Wow.
I think that's an example of how our culture is in terms of like what I mean by in terms of ignorance is bliss.
Mm. Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, that's definitely an interesting look at Thailand. there's a lot of things I didn't quite understand. So thank you for painting that that picture. Obviously, as a tech head, I think the mobile first aspect was the one that struck me the most. But all right. Thank you very much for being on the show with us, Letad, for spending the time. If anyone listening is interested in your work or what you do online, do you have somewhere you can send them
I'm on Twitter at Lertad, although I'm not an active tweeter. I'm there to retweet. That's where I retweet everything.
Okay.
My company, if you're interested, is called Selsuki, Sellsuki. It's on my Twitter profile if you want to check it out. It's built more towards for the local area, but I think that if you're interested in where conversational commerce is headed, I think you might get an idea if you check out the product.
Excellent. So you'll be your Twitter account will be available in the show notes, of course, so you can go there and check that out. Thank you very much. And for me, of course, as you know, it is my name is Not Patrick on Twitter and on Facebook. You can find the show at FrenchSpin.com along with another show about video games if you're interested in that. And if you want to support the show, you can go to Patreon.com/TheFilius Club. That's where you have the campaign to financially support the show. If you wish to do that, please at least consider it, think about it, think if the show is worth it. If you want to support it in other ways, one thing you could do is go leave a review on iTunes or on your podcasting app of choice. That always helps spread the word, so that's also appreciated. Thank you very much for listening to us, and we will be back in at the end of the month with a regular episode. I'm sure we will have a lot of interesting conversations there too. Thanks again, Letad, and talk to everyone soon. Bye.
Goodbye.